Senate Bill 333 process. So in the future, instead of having to come to the legislature each time they need to change their fees, raise their fees, whatever, then they will have to go through the Senate Bill 333 process. They'll go through the Department of Administrative Services, get their prior approval of the new fees, and then they'll have to come back to the legislature, to either an e-board or the full legislature, for a fee ratification. And we also are amending the original bill, like I said, to take those fees out, plus we're adding an emergency clause, and we're also, there is a piece in here that will, that clarifies exactly what their authority is in setting, in administering rules, and that is they can adopt rules pursuant to ORS Chapter 183 as necessary. That was their legal counsel had suggested that they do that. It was inferred in their current statute, but it wasn't clear, so we're just clarifying that.
Senator Johnson.
I'm just trying to ask as a policy point, why is fee ratification a good idea versus having the legislature set fee or give approval?
I'm a little hesitant to answer, Senator Johnson, just because this is my first. So I'm not sure about the history. I know they made a decision that it would be easier to do it administratively as opposed to every time the fee needed to.
Is that a bill that's passed already?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I expect that a major reason for this is if we as a legislature look at every little fee that goes through the system, we're probably finding ourselves to a lot of time, and we're probably also in a situation of micromanaging the agencies, would be my guess at the logic of Senate Bill 330.
May I respond?
Of course.
That's the sunny, optimistic, glass half full scenario.
Well,
let me give you the dour, pessimistic, glass half empty scenario.
Okay.
And that is unbridled fee increases from agencies without a lot of public input. And rule is all well and good as long, and I would like to get the agency on the record as saying that they're going to engage in adequate notice prior to rule promulgation. But that's my concern. And if we're dealing after the fact, so be it. But I just think that it's incumbent then on the legislature to make sure that we get every agency on the record saying that they're going to make every effort to make rule promulgation as public and open as possible.
Well, I certainly wouldn't have any quarrel or objection to that. I think that's diligent should be the purpose for all. Other questions? I sense one. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Benson. The question is, if in fact the agency raises their fees during the interim by administrative rule, and then the legislature refuses to ratify those increases, what happens? Do they refund the money? Do they keep the money? Do they reduce their, what happens?
If the legislature backs off of the increases, that I'm sorry, Representative, Senator, I'm not sure that I had the exact answer for that. Though I do know that the legislature obviously has the authority to change this whole thing, and the risk the agency runs always with this is that they risk the legislature sending them back to where everything has to be done by statute again, back to the point we are with this particular agency right now, which, if memory serves me correctly, came about because of some problems some number of years ago with the agency, is the reason that they're fee increase was before us in the terms of a statutory vote, as contrasted to some just ratification of the existing fees there. What happens if we turn it turn back the clock? I'm not sure that I could have an answer for that.
Senator Witz, I think in a case like this, if they had to raise fees through administrative rule, when they come in with their budget for the biennium, we would have to give them limitation at that point if they're going to pursue a fee increase. So we would get to have an opportunity to have a discussion around that fee increase and the reasons for that fee increase. If they were to raise their fees in the interim, they still would have to come back to us for limitation before they could spend any of that additional money anyway. So we would always have an opportunity to have that discussion with them about the fees and the process that they went through and whether they're appropriate or not.
Thank you.
Is that
understanding?
Okay. Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would point out one thing that appears to be a kind of a fail-safe, I guess it would be called that, is on page 2 of the amendment, starting in line 15, it says the fees may not exceed the cost of administering the regulatory program of the State Board of Tax Practitioners pertaining to the purposes for which the fees are established as authorized by the Legislative Assembly within the Board's budget, and it may be modified by the E-Board. So I think that's kind of the fail-safe statement that if they decide to get a little too wild and crazy with their fees, we could certainly rein those back through the e-board. And also, in an audit situation, they would have to show that the fees that they're charging are actually only for the cost of administering the program and the regulatory program and not for extraneous sorts of activities. So I think we do have those two pieces in there that would allow for, and then as Tim mentioned, in section 3 is the expenditure limitation that I'm assuming is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of the 180,000, Tim, or is that going to be?
It'll be just a little bit over 100,000.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I have to admit, Mr. Chair, that I have a little angst about increasing these fees and, from what was originally proposed in House Bill 2240. I think that, I'm wondering if we are increasing fees when we don't really need to. But be it as it may.
What's the difference in the original proposal?
I believe that the fees that Chair Jensen, the fees that were proposed in House Bill 2240 are the fees that the board intends to pursue through the administrative rule process. We can bring up Dwayne Hunter, the executive director, and he can talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning.
I think you heard Representative Crummell's concern or issue there, and or the staff's response to it. Could you help us a little understand this?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. Thanks for having me in to testify this morning. For the record, my name is Dwayne Hunter. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Tax Practitioners.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Crummell, just for clarification, the question is the specific dollar increase for each one of the fees, is that what you would like to have me address this morning?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, I think that was one of the things that I was concerned about when we talked about this before during the budget part of your presentation a couple of weeks ago, when you were showing us that you were showing a fee increase, and I was concerned about some of the percentages just the fact that we were increasing the fees. Is it really necessary, I guess?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, I'll address that in the And a couple things. Senator Johnson mentioned the value in the outreach to stakeholders. The process started a year ago, January, at the very beginning with us notifying the associations that were involved, the licensees themselves through newsletters, through serve lists, letting them know that the, even in the 05-07 budget, the previous director had a conversation with the legislation about that we would not be increasing fees at that time, but that to be on track and to continue to provide the service at the level that, that we are providing both the consumers and the licensees, in addition to additional costs that the board has, which I'll talk about in my testimony, that the board anticipated at that time in 07-09 needing to do a fee increase. We did ask for input. The only negative input that we got from the association stakeholders, licensees, was the percentage of maybe an example being that maybe a branch registration should be higher and maybe another fee should be lower. But they understood that the fact that we, you know, that the cost to do business has gone up. We have put a lot of resources into unlicensed activity. Representative Crummel, you talked about costs with Department of Justice. That is one of the things that the board, the agency, does not have a lot of control over. Currently, I have a case right now that hasn't even gone to the administrative hearing process that has incurred legal costs of over $15,000 because of the aggressive efforts of the unlicensed individuals' counsel. Every time they respond to us, we have to respond back. And a lot of it, you know, has been tort claims and suits and things of those nature, so we don't have control of that factor. So when you mentioned, you know, we have a budget item for what our Department of Justice costs are, we are able to minimize that legal cost by doing settlements with our licensees, stipulated settlements, final orders, getting those cases resolved with very little legal expense. But in unlicensed activity, they're obviously entitled to hearing, they're obviously entitled to the appeal period. The board has had a case in the past that went all the way to the Supreme Court. So the legal costs, you know, is something that we don't have control over. As far as coming up with the actual numbers, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage in the fact that, you know, I took over as director in January, but I have been with the agency for over 3 years, and so I was involved in the process with the previous director. It's a minimal increase, and we looked at a lot of factors. We looked at what it actually takes to administrate a license. An example would be the time of staff to send it out to them to process the license. There's more cost on an initial process. You know, the cost of postage to mail the exams to the community colleges. You know, where we proctor the exams. We give our exams throughout the whole state. So some of those factors have gone up. I know that the person for the exam and education program, the person who's responsible for that, the exam and education coordinator, the licensing specialist, there was data from them to say what would be an appropriate cost. I think the fact that, you know, an example, and I know there's been some discussion on percentages, if you look at a $5 fee for someone to open a branch, to send us in a form, to have us process it, to print up a branch registration and send it out, that fee is now being requested to be $10. $5 to $10 is reasonable, but when you do look at the percentage aspect, you know, I've had discussion when I've talked to representatives and talked to other shareholders. When you play the percentage, that does seem like higher. But when you look at what the actual dollar amount and the cost, it's pretty minimal. Before I give my testimony, is Chair Jensen or any of the committee, do you have any other specific questions you'd like me to answer at this time?
Same buyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to figure this out, and since if we were to pass this amendment, which does not actually increase your fees, but allows you then to come back and do it in rulemaking, or am I not? I mean, that's what we're talking about, right?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, that is correct. The process that would take place is when 2240 would pass, we would start rulemaking with a it's scheduled at this time to start the 1st of June. We use that 1st of June figure because we want public input. We realize that our licensees are tax professionals. They're doing personal income tax preparation. And so we wanted to make sure that we addressed, had their ability to be able to respond to us. That's why we didn't start it in April during season or in May. We're waiting till June to start it. The public comment will be open for the month of June. We will have a public hearing the end of June. We will have a board meeting the first part of July, and then we are anticipating that the fee increase would actually take place the 1st of August. Part of the reason for that date is because our next renewal cycle is for preparers, and the revenues that are being generated are taking in consideration the money that we would get during the preparer renewal process.
So then on that timeline in August, you would have to come back to the next emergency board to actually ask for the ability to spend, or are we giving that now?
Well, Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, we are including the limitation in this in this bill. And that's a reflection of what we had taken out of their budget when we first heard their bill.
Thank you.
We've already passed that budget out of the meeting.
Correct.
Is that correct?
So we've already provided the limitation.
Chair Jensen, we have not provided the limitation that reflects the fee increase.
Okay.
We have provided limitation at their EBL.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes.
But that will be provided before we leave session, or for the fee increase?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, as soon as this bill is passed, that puts the limitation back into their budget.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Jensen,
it's Monday.
On your biennial expenses, you show a office specialist at $80,000, inflation 3%, and salary increases of about $27,000. What does the inflation line refer to?
Chair Jensen, Senator Wilson, I may have to defer to LFO as far as what the inflation figure actually is. My assumption is increased cost, but I don't have a direct answer for you.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I believe the inflation figure is typically passed, given to the agencies by DAS. It may be a little bit lower than 3%, because I think that's probably tied to the CPI. I think the CPI has been running around 2.5 to 2.75.
Would that include cost of living for employees?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I believe so.
So there's both.
I believe it includes the possibly a cost of living, but it wouldn't include things like step increases or increased benefit costs or anything like that.
So this would reflect both the cost of living adjustment and also a salary increase for the employees.
This bill, I believe, does include salary increases for current employees. So the agency needs the additional limitation to meet the required step increases. So, Chair Jensen, Senator Wissett, so there's two elements in this. One is the 3% covering the inflation, and then also there are salary increases that are step increases due to these employees. These are These are not salary increases over and above what they would be owed according to union contracts or the DAS's standards.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Chair Jensen. Senator Winsett, on page 62 of my book, my budget book, in the package description, your question on the 3%, it said this was calculated by using the 3.1% standard inflation factor. So I'm assuming that's where that 3% factor came from, for point of clarification.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Chair Jensen, I've given you a copy of my written testimony. We've had discussion this morning. The only thing that I would like to stress, and I know that LFO staff did, is the importance of the addition from council as far as there was the assumption that we had the ability to write administrative rules, but we didn't really have it supported in statute. And our council indicated that we should include this language so if someone was to question it, we wouldn't have to go through a court proceeding process. And so that was added in at the very last minute to House Bill 2240.
Okay. Can you run this by us again? So
sure. To adopt rules pursuant to ORS Chapter 183 necessary to carry out the provisions of ORS 673-605 to 673-740, the agency has implied authority to conduct rulemaking as needed to operate the agency in an effective and efficient manner within the guidelines of the agency's mission. On the advice of counsel, the agency is requesting statute authority to conduct rulemaking to carry out the provisions of ORS 673-605 to 673-740.
Okay. Do you have other comments, sir?
That would complete my testimony. Unless anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer it. Thank you very much for letting me testify this morning.
Just to make sure that we all understand, this is a bill that we would originally have been hearing, which would have given statutory authority to these fee increases. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, yes.
And at something of a request of the chair, after learning that most agencies do this by a rule, the chair's request of LFO was to get us an amendment to put this agency in line with where most of the other agencies are as far as this infamous fee increase topic is concerned. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, yes.
Okay.
I believe that I think in the natural resources agencies, most of their fees tend to be in statute. I think they tend to be a little more controversial, so the legislature's chosen to have a little more control over it. I think part of our problem with having these in statute is they bring in a budget bill, and then we'd also have to concurrently work a fee bill at the same time, and we don't want to give them empty limitation. So this gives us a little more certainty about whether or not there is a fee increase or not going into the budget process.
Okay. Any other questions?
I do have one, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Crumley.
Dwayne, have you tied the fee increases to your performance measures so that your client, your paying customers, i.e., tax preparers, are going to be able to see basically what the increased fees are buying them, what they're getting for their money?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummel. Yeah, yes, we have. One of the examples is by providing the fee increase, and which initial, you know, one of the factors brings in the office specialists, which frees up some of the compliance investigators' time that they're currently spending on non-technical duties. That ties in with our performance measure of how we track our complaints. Right now, we track not only the number of complaints, but what our response time is. And we have made, you know, I was the previous investigator, and, you know, we have made every effort and every adjustment that we could, but as caseloads grow, as we get the word out what type of services that we provide, not only to licensees but to the consumer, when you start being proactive that way, the workload goes up. And what we foresee happening is that key performance measure as far as what we're able to produce as far as a time frame. We did use that as a tracking. We are looking at other ways of also tracking our performance. One of those that we are going to be tracking this next year is the time from when we open a complaint to not only when we respond to the consumer or the licensee, but the time when we open the complaint to the time that the complaint is actually resolved, meaning a notice or that we have found that there is not a violation or it's an education piece. So that's one example with the key performance measures that would tie in as a result of the board being able to have this extra support. And if you can use that same logic and apply it towards the licensing piece, you know, if someone applies for a license, our response time of getting them their license back to them. Sometimes, you know, they, according to rule, have to have a license current and displayed at their office. So the sooner we can get that out to our licensees, the sooner they can actually open their office, because if they don't, it is a violation. And we have had people that have actually driven to the office in Salem to pick up their license to be able to, you know, open business that next day. So those are a couple of examples of how we do our tie-in into the key performance measures.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, following up on Representative Crummell's question about the key performance measures, could you review, I was just flipping through my packet and looking for the performance measures, and could you review for us where the board hopes to improve and how this proposed fee increases and limitations and the things we're talking about in 2240, how that would better enable the board to address current deficiencies, and where are those deficiencies?
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, just for clarification, you're not asking in regards to each specific performance measure, but looking at the picture as a whole, with the fee increase being approved, you know, where we're going to put those resources towards?
Where you're going to put those resources, and are there specific key performance measures where you really feel you need some targeted effort and that you are currently deficient on?
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, the one example that comes to play is the compliance portion. The board just for the committee's overview, Oregon is the only state that requires licensure for the preparation of personal income taxes. The Board of Tax Practitioners is given the charge to regulate unlicensed activity in regards to the preparation of personal income taxes. So as that information is disseminated through the licensees and also through taxing agencies, our volume in the compliance area has gone up dramatically. And so the taking away from the non-technical duties in that aspect will allow us to complete our mission as far as responding timely, preventing harm to the consumer, making sure that our licensees are accountable, professional, ethical. one of the things that I find as being the previous investigator is talking with licensees in August and September and having them tell me that they had this person in their area that was, you know, doing tax returns and doing them incorrect and wasn't licensed. And, you know, and it's hard to address that when you're not in the middle of season. These people come into the area. They come from out of state, you know, to our border communities. And they come in, they do the preparation, and then they leave. And so it's hard for us to try to protect the consumer in that aspect. So, you know, that's part of the resources. The exam and education, you know, I didn't talk about that earlier. I talked about the licensing, so I'll talk about the exam and education. We offer exams throughout the whole state. The process is someone has to apply for it. We have to put a pack together, send a test out to the school. They proctor the exam. The test comes back to us. We grade it, send their score out. Then they have to send a license application in. If we can minimize all that is currently being done by one individual, for all, and we do approximately 1,200 exams a year. So by having the addition of the clerical position, the Office Administrative Specialist, as a result of the fee increase, that volume will be able to turn over quicker. Is that giving you the type of answer that you're looking for, Representative Edwards?
Partially. I guess what I'm still struggling with a little bit. I mean, it sounds like compliance is really the a big driver here. And you said by allowing, you know, to focus more there, some other things would be better. And so I guess, is compliance the one area of deficiency that you really see being addressed? I mean, are consumer complaints being generally handled in a timely fashion? I mean, I'm looking for what is the compelling problem. And I'm not saying there's not one. Mm-hmm. I was flipping through the key performance measures and trying to get a good sense of that.
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, I'll try to be a little bit more specific. Compliance is a piece of the picture. But when we talked about what duties would be, you know, eliminated by having the office specialist, there was the, you know, stuffing, mailing of licenses. There was this, the putting the packets together for the exam. Currently, last season, we had the executive director, previous director, coming in the morning at 6 to run the Visa card through the machine. So when the license specialist came in that day at 7 o'clock, they were able to run that process. So there was a, being an agency of 4 individuals, and each one of those positions, including the director, is doing functions to be able to achieve our mission. I hate to say that compliance as far as harm to the consumer, that is probably where the most harm can result. When I did my budget presentation, I testified an individual can do 600 returns in 2 months unlicensed. That those returns not only cause a problem for the individual as far as the audit, the cost to collect, you know, them dealing with the tax agencies, but you know, the impression on the industry is as far as the quality of work that's being done. What I try to do, and what in the compliance capacity is also as the director, is to educate the public, to let them know if you go to see a tax professional, ask to see their license. They should be able to show it to you. They'll be proud to show it to you. That helps minimize the harm to the consumer. So a lot of what I'm testifying about today is taking away the clerical duties from the positions, and which will not only let us maintain the ability of customer service that we're providing to licensees and the consumer, but also be able to do more with the staff people that we have, and also shorten the response time. Licenses out quicker, tests out quicker. The sooner they take the test, the sooner they can become licensed. The board also, for no charge, once a year administrates 300 exams. We pay the cost. We do it here in Salem. You know, things like that we're able to do, but we're only able to do it once a year because of staffing.
Thank you.
This is such a picky point. I'm embarrassed to bring it up, but I'm going to pop with curiosity if I don't. Why doesn't everybody in your office able to run credit cards? Why would the manager need to come in and run credit cards?
Representative Jensen, Senator Johnson, in the previous director would come in at 6 o'clock in the morning and run the credit cards through the credit card machine, so when the licensing specialist came in, the revenues were already banked, they could just load the information into the database and then be able to start the licensing process.
You told me a factual scenario. You didn't explain why. I mean, I guess I just don't understand why your manager... Was there that much time saving? I'm just mystified by a management decision to operate that way.
I think part of it is because of the way the agency, Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, the way NCA agency works is there are ebbs and flows. We renew 1,900 licensees starting the 1st of May to the end of May. That's consultants and businesses. So there's a huge amount of work that comes in a very short period of time. And then we also do the same thing with preparers in September. My assumption, and also having been there, is he would come in and do that so this volume would be able to get out to the licensees quicker.
I suppose major part of the concern of the question would be, if you get the clerical person, are they going to come in at 6 o'clock then in the morning to run the run those before the technical staff gets there?
Chair Jensen, I don't foresee that happening, that I would have staff there before 6. The director came in at 6 o'clock every morning. It's just instead of his normal functions, he would do that to help to contribute towards that process.
I suppose, you know, the issue seems this way to me, but the issue that is coming up is that the clerical staff position that you're talking about, you know, put this in a dollar pay grade level for me. How much money are they going to make?
It's budgeted for $80,000 for the biennium.
And that's $80,000 for the biennium. That's $40,000 a year, and that's with some package of fringe benefits. Insurance,
that's the majority is the medical, the dental, the package of benefits.
Okay,
that's correct.
Okay, so
it's the entry level OS1.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so what are the people who the other what's the salary range of the other people that are in the agency?
Chair Jensen, currently we have an administrative specialist, 1, pay range 17. We have a program analyst, 1, which is a pay range 23. The senior compliance investigator is a pay range 25. And the executive position, my position, is a pay range 28.
Okay. Pay range 17 is at what level? I mean, what is that? Spell out for those of us who are ignorant in terms of dollars per month or per
approximately $3,000 gross a month as a salary for an AS1, and you know it varies depending on where you are in the eight or currently 9 steps.
Okay. So the issues, you've got a lot of clerical work being done by people that are at a pay grade level that makes that expensive clerical work. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, that is correct. When a public records request comes in and the compliance specialist at a pay range 25 is photocopying an investigation to determine what they're going to send out, the rate is based on what they are currently paid.
I am making the assumption that the volume workload of the agency has gotten to a point that it's more cost efficient to hire somebody at the clerical level than it is to continue to use the quote-unquote professional staff, for lack of knowing exactly what all the pay grade sort of things mean.
Chair Jensen, that is absolutely correct. Part of the reason that the agency is at that position is 2001, the agency was not fiscally sound. And so from that point forward, duties were shifted, cost savings were done, and everybody, you know, made the agency as successful as possible. And therefore, we started looking at, you know, what are we actually, you know, what is this person doing? If you have a pay range 23 that's stuffing exams into an envelope and mailing to a school and then having to come back in and open them up, that's a pretty technical position at a 23, and they're actually doing support functions.
Okay. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Hunter, how many other states license tax practitioners?
Chair Jensen, Senator Winsett, Oregon is the only state that requires licensure for the preparation of personal income taxes. California requires that you take a 60-hour course and register, but the only compliance portion in California is to make sure that if you are doing tax preparation, that you are registered with them. We actually, the state of Oregon is actually consumer protection. You know, we're out there. If someone is doing something as a licensee, we hold them accountable through the Code of Professional Conduct, and we also eliminate people that are doing it, resulting in harm to the consumer. Many states are looking into it, and the IRS has had discussion for the last couple of years about possible national licensing. But my best information as of today is Oregon is the only state, and California has a registration requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. Mr. Chair, you know, I think in round figures, Oregon is about 40th in the nation in taxes collected and 7th in the nation in per capita spending, government spending. And I think this is probably a good example not to, I think this is probably a pretty well-run agency, but I mean, it's one of the reasons why we deferred our taxing authority to fees and charges. This does, by my figures, it does represent about a 20% increase in fees and a 25% increase in FTE without raising taxes a penny.
That it does.
Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that, and this is a comment in general for the committee, we talked a little bit earlier about how some of our natural resource agencies, because they're a little bit more, the legislature wants to have their finger on the policy pulse. And really wants to have a little more oversight. Those remain in statute, and I think that some of the issues that some of us may or may not be struggling with, and I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, but I'm just mulling this over in my own mind as I listen here today, is that we're talking about turning this over to rulemaking with the passage of 2240, and I think that thereby taking away a level of scrutiny, and some of us may be struggling with why Oregon is the only, and I asked this during the initial presentation some weeks ago, why is it that Oregon is the only state to license tax practitioners? I'm not doubting that the agency is well run. I am questioning whether or not we need the agency in the first place. And I know that that's a discussion that was probably had some years ago, and was probably the subject of vigorous debate, and we are where we are today. But as I look at this budget, this bill, I have to question to myself, what is the core function that is being served? And it seems to me that the agency exists to serve the preparers primarily, although there's a consumer protection element. I'm hearing that a lot of it is the real interface is probably happens more with the preparers than the general public. And so if the agency is legitimate, and I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm thinking about it, is it well run? And if it may be well run, and it could, in fact, be well run, but still have deficiencies in performance measures, but well run given the resources that it has. And if there are deficiencies, would more money help the agency address those two legitimate ends? So those are the things that I'm mulling over in my mind as we think about the budget. And I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know if the committee has any other thoughts about that or not. That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay, Crumble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, if I may. Wayne, you mentioned the clerical work and putting in credit card numbers and all of that kind of stuff, which is actually a little bit scary if it means that somebody was writing down these numbers, leaving them in the office overnight, and then the next day somebody else was going in and plugging the numbers in, and then, heaven only knows what happened to that piece of paper that had the credit card number on it. Are you, with the increased fees and the tech package that I think I see in here, are you looking at going online so that practitioners can renew their licenses or even make initial application for their licenses online, pay the fees via a secure portal and that sort of thing?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummel, there has been discussion as far as possibly using an online service. Risk management, e-commerce, those are a couple, risk. Just to back up, when you talk about the Visa, just for clarification, locked file cabinets throughout the office. The Visa information comes from the consumer on an application. We don't allow it to be emailed to us. We take a lot of security and making sure that information isn't going anywhere. We've actually changed our process where we don't have a credit card machine in our office anymore. It's only the Visa information is done through ViaClix, which is a secured site on someone's computer after it's been unlocked and accessed. And so, for that piece of the picture, as far as licensing, having someone else do the licensing for us. We are looking into the beginning steps of issuing the renewals out as far as the cost savings, being able to email the renewals out to our licensees. We don't want to email a generic blank form. We could currently do that now with a serve list, but we want to be able to email each licensee individually a pre-printed form because that way it's easier to process when it comes back to us. I have had conversations with eGov in regards to having our license base, our licensing database being able to be accessed by the consumer. And one of the conversations that came out of that was e-commerce, which is a cost savings and also a secure way for them to take care of it. The agency at this point is looking into those versus to get the licensing database. We are, you know, e-commerce isn't an avenue that people are going. We're also looking at touch screen testing. So like Sylvan, where you go in and you take the test, we don't have all the cost of it being shipped back and forth. We're continuing to look at ways of making the system better. Unfortunately, the agency has really made an effort to not, you know, to remain financially sound, and so therefore we've put off, you know, doing things. There is a cost to put our database out there. There's a cost to do touch screen testing, but we want to make sure that we have the money to be able to do that, and that we're able to still respond in a timely fashion.
Okay. Just as a suggestion, you might consider talking to the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, because they are doing all of the things you're talking about online, and how they're doing it through the state's portal.
We're scheduled to have a public testimony on this, and no one has shown up, and there's no one signed up for it, so I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session, which is more of what we've been in, I think, than we have a public hearing. So to kind of keep us in a straight and narrow here.
Okay.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dwayne, do you know, in terms of the history of the and this is kind of following up on Representative Edwards a little bit, in terms of the history of licensing for tax practitioners in Oregon, was the licensing brought about because of events that were occurring, or was it brought about because the industry itself said, you know, we really need to be regulated here because we've got people that aren't qualified doing these things? And
Chair Jensen, Representative Kremel, I'm glad you asked that, because when we talked before, I didn't have a specific answer. I was able to talk to one of our current board members who is a past chair, Donna Gilmore, and said, you know, I know that the agency started in 74. I've got a copy of the first license on my wall in the director's office. You know, how did this get started? 1972, there was an outcry from the public on tax preparation, specifically personal income tax preparation that was being done, and consumers were being harmed. And so who took it upon themselves is there were professional tax preparers. The beginning of Oregon Association of Tax Consultants, you know, these associations that were out there that were being lumped into these groups of people doing a shabby job and harming the consumer and just there to make a quick buck. So they came in and testified at the legislation saying, we need to be able to keep these people that don't have a license that are making us look bad in addition to harming the consumer. And that's how things started in 74. Another example of that is H&R Block, had a clip on the News 8, well, it wasn't H&R Block, it was the News Channel, had a clip about H&R Block doing tax preparation on the East Coast. Now, there is no licensing requirement on the East Coast, and they went in with an undercover camera, and they come in, and the person says, well, I worked as a restaurant, and you know, don't have to declare my tips. And the person who was working for that unlicensed business of an H&R Block on the East Coast said, no, those are just kind of things that you assume when you take a lower paying job, you get to keep those kind of things. That type of activity would not happen here because my licensees have a code of conduct. They have to disclose. They have to disclose their fees. So, you know, when Representative Edwards, you know, talked about the need in Oregon, another example is we pull part of our data for our budget presentation on what our error ratio is of tax professionals with the Oregon Department of Revenue, and it's currently about 3% of tax returns, personal income tax returns that are processed by the Department of Revenue are completed without having errors. So that's another example of, you know, the benefit of having an agency that holds their licensees to be professional, competent, and ethical in all their activities. And also, if someone wants to do taxes and they're unlicensed, we're more than happy to show them the process that they can not only become licensed, but they can start for a nominal fee and operate a successful business in Oregon, which is also in line with what the governor looks at.
Okay, thank you. One last question, Mr. Chair. I noticed in the back in the reports section of our notebooks, it says audits report that a change of director audit report or change of director audit was conducted in the 2003-05 biennium, and no changes were made due to the audit. Brings up actually, I guess, two questions. One is, if you took over in January, has there been or is there going to be a change of director audit being performed? And although it says no changes were made due to the audit, what was the recommendations out of the audit? And I guess it would have been nice to have just a one-page blurb about what the audit showed and what the recommendations from the auditors were when they audited the agency.
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, to answer your first question, I am fully expecting that the agency will be audited. It is a practice that DAS, you know, when there is a director change. I do not have any dates at this point. But since, you know, prior to taking over, having a conversation with the director when the director was leaving, you know, there was discussion about, you know, when I leave and when they fill this position, that an audit takes place. And this is where the backup information as far as what's, you know, history, what they're going to be looking at, SFMS, expenditures, personnel, payroll, this is where everything is. So that part was communicated to me. Not speaking about what changes were due as a result of the audit, I believe that a lot of the agency's lack of financial soundness that occurred when the previous director took over in 2003 and the other director left rather abruptly, and there was conversations with DAS about, you know, the agency had borrowed $90,000 from the Treasury to pay its bills. The agency could not have people come out and work on the computers unless they had funds there waiting for them. And there was a lot of discussion about, you know, either you turn this around or there's a possibility that the agency is going to go away. And because the previous director came into that environment, that is why that we have ran a very tight ship. The expectations of what your duty is going to be, if you have this position, you're going to do everything that goes along with that because we don't have any money. We now are at a point where we are in good financial position as far as in the guidelines of what an operating budget should be, you know, 4 months worth of operating expenses. Those are the type of conversations I think came out of that audit. Is the other director left with like 4 days notice, and the previous director had lengthy conversations about this is how much money is out there, this is how much is owed, and what are you going to do to take care of things? And he did a very good job in getting the answer where it is today.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Whitson.
Mr. Chair, I, you know, to follow up on what Representative Edwards floated a few minutes ago, it's a little like the land use planning in Oregon that was started about 33 years ago and as a leadership thing, and if you look over your shoulder, 49 other states have declined to follow on both instances. I have to wonder if Chair Representative Edwards' concern of whether we need this agency.
That's certainly a policy discussion that this body has every right to, you know, to pursue. Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to go back to your statement about following up with the tax Department of Revenue and at 3%. And I thought you said at 3%. Correct. I mean, it was a three. You only found a 3% error rate among preparers. Is that what you said?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, that less than 3% of tax returns that are processed by the Oregon Department of Revenue by tax professionals had an error ratio.
Okay.
So 97% of them were being done correctly, and one of the ways that they can track that very easily is on an Oregon return, there actually is a box where you have to put a license number. And the Department of Revenue communicates with the tax board if something isn't put there. One of the cases I had, a person was calling himself a doctor of law, and they were just putting little mailing labels on there. And Revenue saw that, gave that to me. I did an investigation. I also shared that information with the Department of Revenue, which prevented them from issuing refunds. They pulled all the returns. We have in statute the ability to exchange information between the Oregon Department of Revenue and the tax board, and it's all through statute.
Thank you. I thought that's what you meant, but I heard something.
Yeah. I may not have gotten
that clear. I was sure that's what he meant, too, but I would agree that that's Senator Johnson.
In that instance, was there also a reporting mechanism that alerted the bar?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, the mechanism for alerting the bar, this person was a disbarred attorney out of Vancouver, out of Washington. They were never a member of the Oregon Bar. They moved from Vancouver to Portland and set up a business as a tax expert. When they were licensed, they advertised that they were a tax expert in estate planning and these kind of things. Person spoke three languages. After being disbarred and moving to Portland, they would do a three-year look back on tax returns and say that they were done incorrectly by another individual, and that if you opened a small business or if you had this, you could get these exuberant refunds. The IRS issued the refunds. The state was able to, in 56 people, not issue the refunds, so they didn't have to issue a bad refund and do the collections as a result of them working with our agency.
Have you ridden this pony as far as you want to ride it?
I think so.
We have an amendment to the bill before us. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Dash 2 amendment takes the fees out of statute, adds a limitation, declares an emergency. There's a housekeeping bit about giving them the actual responsibility for writing the rule instead of having that authority implied.
Do I have objections to the Dash 2 amendment?
Chair, I guess the Dash, it sounds like the Dash 2 amendments, I mean, really get to the crux of my questioning. And it seems to me that with the passage of the Dash 2, the passage of this bill, we are essentially sending to the legislative body as a whole a recommendation that the board is the appropriate way to handle these functions in the state of Oregon, and we are, the way I see it, and other folks, members may not see it that way, but we are essentially saying that we are going to move forward in enshrining this agency in, although it's been going for a long time, but you know, really making it less subject to scrutiny, and I don't know that I'm yet convinced that that's the way we should go.
Okay. I think we got. Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would point out that also in addition to because right now the way their statute is currently written, the agency has to charge the fees that are there, because it doesn't say it can charge up to. They have to charge the fees that are stated in statute. this also gives the board the ability to reduce fees if they find that they are over-collecting because of because as it states in this dash two, is they can only charge the fees for administering a regulatory program. If they find that they're collecting too much in fees, they can by rule reduce those fees as well. So I think it kind of creates a two-way street. We still have the oversight, though, is a point that I would make.
Thank you, Representative.
And I'm not objecting to the dash twos, by the way.
That was one of the things that I was going to point out, and was also going to include somehow or another in the record that if this agency's cash carry forward or whatever it is exceeds some number, like say 7 months. And I think the norm is somewhere around 4 or 5 months sort of thing, then they would be obligated to look at a reduction of whatever the fees are that they're charging, because failure to do so, if I were to have anything to do with it in the next legislative session, would be to clamp down pretty hard on them and get those fees back to where they were merely meeting the functions of the agency, not building up a big cash reserve. And as we find with one other agency, the Board of Accountancy, where they've got a ton of money stuck away there, the members want that to happen. Too, want it to come down, not so much because of what they're paying, but because they discovered in 01 that these other funds can quickly, during crisis, disappear into general fund sort of thing. So there are some reasons that they would not want to be extra taxpayers themselves with it. So it looks like I'm going to need... Are you okay?
Okay.
It looks like I'm going to need a senator. Senator.
Senator Bates, I believe.
Well, either that or...
I'll give you a courtesy vote.
Okay. Any other? Hearing no other exemptions showing that... Senator Whitsitt is giving us a courtesy vote and reserving rights to do otherwise at other points in time, and that Senator Edwards is not Senator Edwards. Say, I'm sorry for the demotion. Representative Edwards is casting a no vote. Let the dash two amendments be adopted. Then. LFO's recommendation is, quote unquote, that we pass this on to the full Ways and Means with a an acceptance of
due pass.
With the due pass recommendation, as that we pass House Bill 2240 on to the full Ways and Means as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there objections?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm not objecting. But I do think that one of the things that does need to occur is that either in a newly formed legislative performance audits office or through the current situation with the Secretary of State, that number one, they get to work right away on the change of director audit that should have been completed. And that number two is that a note to the agency that if they're however the audit comes back, that if there are recommendations, number one, that they inform us as to what those recommendations are through JLAC, and that number two is that they will take action to actually follow up on the recommendations for implementation.
Thank you, Representative. That, too, was going to be a recommendation with this. I have considerable concern that we have not had a Secretary of State change of administrator audit on the agency, if that is correct. I mean, I understand that to be the requirement, statutory requirement of the Secretary of State's office every time there's an agency head that is, changes, that they do an audit on it. And that would have certainly been beneficial for us at this particular point if that audit had been here and available to us. Okay. And
my positive vote on this would also be a courtesy to the chair and to Dr. Bates.
Thank you.
And my objection to the dash twos would carry forward to the bill as well.
Yeah.
As well.
I'm fine.
You're playing with a pencil, huh?
Yeah, I'm fine. Okay.
Showing that then Representative Edwards declines to support, and Senator Whitsitt makes no guarantee on the in his support, makes no guarantee of future actions that he might take either on the Senate floor or on the full Ways and Means. So, any other objections? Hearing none, so approved. Given composition of the Senate, Senator Bates, our...
Oh, give it to him. That's what you get for not showing up.
you want to bail him out or let him have it?
I'll do it.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I appreciate that. Do I have any volunteers, Representative Crummell?
Sure, I'll do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That will be, I will carry it on the full Ways and Means then, and Representative Crummell will carry it on the House floor. Okay. There's no other business before. Do we have any words of wisdom for us for future actions that we're going to be taking?
Chair Ginson, you're free to go.
We're